Sometimes a cup of coffee changes everything. Recently, as I was about to pay for my latte at a local coffee shop, I saw a sign that said, "We accept Bitcoin." "Very cool," I said to the barista, who informed me that there was a Bitcoin meetup group that got together at this very coffee shop every Monday morning. That triggered my curiosity, and so I showed up the following Monday, and the Monday after that, and the Monday after that, and what started out as mild curiosity had some surprises in store. Not only was Bitcoin a very viable currency, but it also had the potential to change our world into a more equal playing field and increase global prosperity. If this sounds like so much utopian hogwash, tune in while I chat with two Bitcoin advocates I met at my local coffee shop. Hi there, welcome to Boomer Bedtime Stories. It's really great to have you on the show today. Introduce yourself to me, Philippe.
Yeah, thank you very much for having us on your podcast today. My name's Cole. I work with Coinos with business development, marketing, and promoting. We currently have over 100 businesses using us internationally, and we're only looking to exponentially grow that number in due time.
I'm Adam Saltes. I live in North Vancouver. I have two kids, and I'm a web developer. I built Coinos started building it 10 years ago, off and on. And I've been involved in the Bitcoin scene in Vancouver for many years. So I help host the meetups here and I do education. I teach people how to use Bitcoin wallets and get started with it.
I want to go back to the very beginning because the whole cryptocurrency for the boomer generation is still a little bit of a mystery. Some people are getting into it for sure. I know lots of people who are starting to get into it, and a lot of other people are totally suspicious. Literally, when I said I was going to the meetup that had Jeff Booth, my son literally texted me, don't get involved in Bitcoin, blah, blah, blah. And he was really, and I'm going, hey, you're young, you're supposed to be interested in this stuff, but he's very wary about it. So tell us a little bit about cryptocurrency, how it began. I know it started with Bitcoin, so tell me a little about that history.
So the Bitcoin, it all started with the Bitcoin white paper that Satoshi Nakamoto came out with on Halloween in 2008. Satoshi Nakamoto was in a group of other cryptographers known as the cypherpunks at the time, and they were all into cryptography before Bitcoin even existed. There's other history that was before 2008, like other versions of like Bitgold and other stuff that we might not need to get into, but Bitcoin itself started with the white paper being published as an idea, asking the community of cryptographers and programmers online at the time. A popular platform where all of the programmers and cryptographers would talk would be Bitcoin Talk. That was one of the popular forums at the time. And then,
so these were almost like chat rooms. We used to have chat rooms.
Yeah,
right?
Online chat rooms, no KYC, so no one's identity was really public there unless you wanted your identity to be. To this day, we don't know who Satoshi Nakamoto is. There's all kinds of theories that we could get into some other time. And then the first Bitcoin block was mined in January 3rd, 2009. And that is officially the start date of Bitcoin, essentially, is when the first block was mined. In layman terms, that just means when the network was put online and starting to be used. And ever since then, the power of the network, aka hash rate, and the use case and the usability of it has grown exponentially to a point now where it's essentially indestructible. You can't actually destroy Bitcoin. You can't erase it. You can't undo transactions. This is all very valuable, and that's why we believe in it so much, because it's decentralized, not in control of a centralized authority.
There are many, many, many cryptocurrencies. Mm-hmm. Do you know how many there are right now?
There's tens of thousands. There's multiple tens of thousands, and there is probably, on average, if I was to guess, over 100 to even 400 per day being made on all these other networks and stuff like that. And most of them are scams. All of them don't have the quality that Bitcoin has. Mm. And that's what separates Bitcoin from the rest of the cryptocurrencies, right, is that Bitcoin is the only one that's truly decentralized. and not in control of a CEO and his team of whale billionaire friends.
Right, so there's no banks, no actual individual person that could turn it off or scoop it up for themselves or whatever.
Correct.
Yeah. So let's just go back, because this whole idea of mining, this totally baffles my brain.
Mm-hmm. Mining is the process of creating new Bitcoins. The way this works is you'd get a computer that has Bitcoin software running on it, and every 10 minutes, a block of Bitcoin transactions gets processed on the network. So all the latest payments that are happening right now, within about 10 minutes, some miner is going to collect all those and put them into the blockchain. And the way that that is determined of which miner out of the tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of computers out there that are running, the way that the one gets chosen that gets to mine the block is through this kind of lottery system where it's trying to guess a random number that matches a certain pattern. And if it finds the first one that matches that pattern that everybody else knows about, then it gets to take all the transactions and kind of stamp them into the blockchain and collect the fees that all the transactions are paying, and also the block reward, which is a fixed amount of Bitcoin that every block has that goes to that miner. So right now the block reward is 6.25 Bitcoins, which I guess in dollar terms is 6 times 40,000, something like $240,000.
Okay.
So every Canadian.
It's still all Greek to me, but okay, I'll take your word for it. If you started back in January 3rd, 2009, and you go, you have no mined Bitcoin at this point, but didn't he say there's never going to be more than 21 million Bitcoin?
Total supply.
So he creates this number, not randomly, because there's some way that it can't ever exceed that.
So block reward, the 6.25, that's the current reward. It used to be 12.5 a few years ago.
Okay.
And before that, it was 25 Bitcoin per block. And at the very start of Bitcoin, it was 50 Bitcoin per block. So every 4 years, that reward gets cut in half.
Okay.
So it's always decreasing. So actually most of the Bitcoin that will ever exist have already been mined over the last 12 years or so.
Right.
And over the next 100 years, it's just going to keep petering out. There's going to be a few more in a year or so that the block reward is going to go down to 3.125 per block. And then it'll go down to 1. Whatever, until it peters out to nothing. And then at the end, there will be 21 million Bitcoins in circulation.
The reward is what brings them into circulation. The miners bring the Bitcoin into circulation. So right now, the block reward, which is happening every 10 minutes on average, 6.25 Bitcoin is brought into circulation, meaning that you and me can buy it from exchanges every 10 minutes, 6.25 Bitcoin. So there is a slight inflation rate right now for Bitcoin, but the good news is that it is deflationary because it's getting lower and lower every year.
Okay, I'm almost getting it. But if you have only 21 million Bitcoin, at some point, does it just stop being a currency?
The Bitcoin are divisible into 100 million pieces.
Okay.
So each one has 8 decimal places you can divide it into. Kind of like, you know, a dollar has 100 cents. One Bitcoin has 100 million Satoshis.
So when I buy Bitcoin, I put my $200 in and I buy Bitcoin, I'm getting obviously not a whole Bitcoin, because Bitcoin's worth, what is it at the moment, 29,000 US or something. And so I'm just getting a fraction of the number of Satoshi or whatever it is.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. But they don't say that. They just say you've got this much Bitcoin in your wallet.
Yeah, it'd be like a decimal place, like 0.0002 Bitcoin or something.
Okay, well, that part's really interesting. But I want to get from you what you think the future of cryptocurrency is going to be in our world, because I think that's the most important thing. As we've been seeing, there's a lot of banks closing down and we're having problems with regular currency, plus we have this big inflation that's happening right now. Where's the future for cryptocurrency in general?
I've never been this confident, actually, in the future of cryptocurrency, the future of Bitcoin, essentially, because with the inflation happening, it's out of control, and the only way for them to lower inflation is to raise interest rates, And when I say raise interest rates, that's like making your mortgage more expensive, making your credit card debt more expensive, and your line of credit's more expensive. It even happened to me, like with some of my finances that I have, interest rates went up. So the Fed is in debt $31 trillion right now. I think their debt payment right now is about $500 billion per year is what they have to pay just to maintain their $31 trillion debt around that time. I could be wrong, but it's around that number. So it's a double-edged sword, kind of. And when you have a double-edged sword situation like this, it means there has to be a change from the current system. No matter how much adjusting they do to the current system that they have, it's not going to be fixed. It's actually unfixable. Mm. It is with the current system. So that's why we have Bitcoin as a really, really good option and opportunity for a country to get out of their significant debt and for them to use it as currency, right? So that's one of the biggest reasons I'm confident about the future of Bitcoin, yeah, and how it can thrive in an environment where all of these banks are becoming insolvent. The reality is all banks are insolvent right now as we speak. Which is scary.
Well, they're just running on debt, right?
They're running on debt.
Although somehow they make billions of dollars every year.
Well, no, it's crazy, right? So like if you put $10,000 into a bank, what they do, they're able to leverage your $10,000 and create more money from that $10,000. Where does that more money come from? It comes from the Fed printing and giving it to the bank as a loan. Right now in this year, we're breaking all kinds of records in the wrong ways in the traditional financial industry. Call it trade, TradFi or whatever, traditional finance, breaking all kinds of records. Three of the biggest, of the five of the biggest banks in history have had to get bailed out this year. They went belly up, essentially, right? Because of how insolvent they are. The reserves, banks run on fractional reserves. That's a very broken system. So banks don't have to have the money that the depositors are owed. So if you put $1,000 into the bank owes you $1,000. Do you know what I mean? Right? Yeah, that's what I mean by that. So if the bank has $1 billion of assets that people deposited into the bank, they don't have $1 billion in the reserves because they're giving that money to other people.
Right.
So it's a disguised Ponzi structure. Right. Banks are the largest Ponzi structures. So.
Ouch.
ouch is right. Let's say I have 5 Bitcoin. I know that I'm always going to have that 5 Bitcoin. 5 Bitcoin equals 5 Bitcoin, right? I don't have to worry about a fractional reserve system. That's if I hold it in a cold storage wallet.
Right, right. And we can get into that in a minute.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah. The more bank failures happen, the better it is for Bitcoin and other risk assets. Because a lot of these multi-billionaires and stuff and institutions are flocking to Bitcoin when they get scared of their bank.
Right, right. And people in the boomer age, all our money is what we have to live on for the rest of our lives. We're not necessarily going out to get new jobs to support ourselves, but that's another question. So Coinos itself is what? You mentioned it is a wallet, but really it's more than a wallet, is it not?
Mainly a wallet, yeah. It's a website, so you can go to coinos.io in a browser, and you log in with a username and password. And then it allows you to use our Bitcoin node. So we're running Bitcoin and the Lightning Network, which is a layer on top of Bitcoin that allows you to do cheaper, faster Bitcoin payments. And it saves you from having to set that up yourself. So in the past, when Bitcoin was first starting, the way for someone to use it would be to download the Bitcoin software, the same one that Satoshi created, and run it on your computer. And there's a whole lot of setup that has to happen before it's ready to use. It has to download the whole blockchain from everyone else, and then it has to stay online and synchronize with all these other computers. And there's a little bit of configuration to get it working properly.
In other words, it's the regular user.
Yeah, it used to be not so bad, but especially in the last few years, the blockchain size has grown really large. It's like over 500 gigabytes now. So even just having the hard drive space to run that on your computer, a lot of people don't want to be bothered with that. So Coinos is a way to save you from having to run Bitcoin and the Lightning Network yourself and just use ours with a web interface.
Okay. So can
simpler.
I bring my Canadian dollars to Coinos and buy Bitcoin?
No, for that, you'd have to go to another exchange or brokerage. So we don't do any of the conversion between dollars and Bitcoin. Once you have some Bitcoin, you could store it with us. You could transact with other people. You could send it to someone else, or you could receive Bitcoin from someone else. Okay. But if you want to go in and out of dollars, there's other companies that'll handle that.
Okay, gotcha. When I first met you guys, it was at a coffee shop, and the reason that I found out about you is that at the front desk that says we accept Bitcoin,
yeah.
And it was through your company that all that could happen. So if I wanted to buy my cup of coffee at my little local coffee shop, I could use my Bitcoin, but I would have to have a Coinos wallet in order to buy that coffee. Is that correct?
Any Bitcoin wallet. It doesn't have to be Coinos.
Oh, okay.
So we can take Bitcoin payments from other wallets. But the merchant there, they're not going to convert your dollars into Bitcoin on the spot. You would have to acquire some Bitcoin.
Of course.
And then you'd be able to spend it there.
That's what I meant.
By sending them the payment.
But I was thinking I would be using your wallet to buy at their store.
You can.
Okay.
Yeah. Ours is a good option, but it's not the only option.
Oh, okay, okay. Right. I get it. That's what you're doing, I understand, is you're going to merchants and saying, hey, make it available so people can buy. I could buy, if I want to buy my new electric bike, I can buy it in Bitcoin.
Yeah, in my opinion, it's the easiest option on the market to do all of that. Coinos.
Okay. It's always been a chicken and egg issue with people wanting to get into Bitcoin. They say, well, where can I spend it? And I say, well, not many places.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you go to a merchant and say, can you accept Bitcoin? Because there's people that, be interested in trying it out. And they say, well, how many people are going to use it? It's like, well, not many. So we'd have to sort of break out of the cycle of not enough merchants, not enough users.
Right. But if you were a merchant accepting Bitcoin, and Bitcoin's going to be going up, it would make a lot of sense. You would say, okay, now I've got this little bit of Bitcoin. I'm not even going to touch that for my coffee business, for example.
Yeah.
I'm just going to keep it as Bitcoin. Then I'm going to have this Bitcoin, which will never lose its value, whereas the dollars I'm collecting are going to be losing their value, correct?
Yeah. There was a cafe on the corner of Nanaimo and Hastings here called the Sweet Tooth Cafe that I hooked up to accept Bitcoin in 2012. And so we had a few people going in there, and that's back when Bitcoin was like $10 per Bitcoin. So any Bitcoin they received back then, if they just kept that aside and didn't look at it for all these years, if they go and check their account now, if they have, say, 50 Bitcoin in there, from doing $500 in sales, that 50 Bitcoin is now 50 times 40,000 is
a lot of money.
A big number.
Yeah.
$2 million or something.
Yeah. Wow. Just for buying some coffee, really, basically.
But even in the last year or so, the merchants that we've been onboarding to the Lightning Network, they've been seeing their money go up. Not that much, but it's maybe close to doubled.
Nice little improvement on your investment.
I haven't kept in touch with them specifically, but there have been other merchants that have reached out and said, hey, thanks for pushing me to take Bitcoin back then, because I held it. And
that's great.
Yeah.
We were talking about the terrible state of the financial situation, which is global, but there are a few countries that have chosen to use Bitcoin. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so El Salvador is the only country right now to have Bitcoin as an official legal tender, but there is a lot of countries in addition to El Salvador that have hundreds and hundreds of businesses of all kinds that are accepting Bitcoin. BTCmap.org is our favorite map to look at. It's a global map showing all the businesses in the world that accept Bitcoin payments. Maps.bitcoin is also a good option. I've discovered a lot of really cool businesses on there. You can look on, New York has hundreds. Miami has hundreds. Venezuela's got like 500. There's a country in Europe that has 600. The adoption is growing, for sure.
They're mostly accepting Bitcoin, not other cryptocurrency.
They're mostly accepting Bitcoin. Some of the businesses that I am referring to accept other currencies other than Bitcoin, but most of them accept just Bitcoin, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where would people go to get more understanding about Bitcoin? I mean, I've seen a number of documentaries. Some of them are pretty scary.
Mm-hmm.
There was that fellow, I can't remember his name, he was Canadian, he set up this wonderful system and then it all collapsed.
Jerry. I met him.
You met him, oh dear.
That was unfortunate.
But
yeah, good places to go. I think bitcoin.org is a website. It has links to a bunch of resources there. If you're into books, there's a book called The Bitcoin Standard that often gets recommended. I haven't actually read it myself, but I've heard it's good. And yeah, there are lots of YouTube channels.
There's a lot of terrible information. When you're getting free information, you got to be very careful. One of the best YouTubers I can suggest is one called Bitcoin University.
Okay.
His name is Matthew Crater. He's the one that runs that. And the information that he teaches is so high value. He just points out all kinds of macroeconomic events, all with the intention of pointing value to Bitcoin.
Right.
He talks about why Ethereum is so dangerous and why all these other scam coins, right, other than Bitcoin, are dangerous. And he gives very point-blank information. He doesn't sugarcoat anything. He speaks in easy-to-understand English. He speaks slow as well. That's one of my recommendations. There's also BTC Sessions. He's well-known in the general Bitcoin community.
He's from Calgary.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've met him in person. Nice guy.
Right.
We should probably mention, if you're in Vancouver, then we have our events. So we have a BitDevs meetup, which is like a technical focus, but it's beginners are welcome.
Yes.
So we always go through the latest Bitcoin news and developments and just kind of have an open discussion about it. And then people can have Q&A if you have any questions.
So are you on meetup groups? I mean, where do I find
you? We're on meetup.com.
Okay.
And there's three groups there. There's the Vancouver Bitcoiners.
And then there is BTC Van City, and then we have Bitcoin Privilege.
Okay.
Those are the main, I would say, some of the main Bitcoin groups in Vancouver.
Yes, I did go to the BTC Van City when Jeff Booth was talking.
Nice.
He's fascinating, and I actually got his book out of the library as an ebook, so I've been reading that slowly. But very fascinating. He really paints a very different picture of what currency does and what, and talks a lot about deflation and inflation. So if you're interested in the economics, which my son is, and I sent him the link, what would be a way of people getting started in Bitcoin? Obviously, they have to learn a little bit about it, but it's not really that hard. I did set up a wallet myself, and I have been able to transfer money from my bank into the wallet, and then I can buy cryptocurrency. Some people say if the dollar's going to fall, then throw a lot of money at it. Would you say a percentage? What would you do?
There's a case-by-case basis, depending on how much money people want to invest. For me, myself, I've invested almost all the money I have into Bitcoin, and so I'm really banking on it in that way. I would recommend for a beginner, download ShakePay. It's an exchange. So you download the ShakePay app, create an account, and then you would send Canadian dollars to ShakePay from your bank account. Any Canadian bank account would be okay. And then you would send from ShakePay. What I've been doing is I send a lot of it to my Coinos wallet, because Coinos is so simple to use, and not just in-person merchants, but I also pay online merchants with Bitcoin regularly with other companies that are unrelated to Coinos. And I use my Coinos wallet for that. So.
Okay. And what sort of things are you buying with Bitcoin?
Online, there's clothing stores that accept it. There is like my tickets to the Bitcoin conferences, of course. I have various programs that I have subscriptions to that accept Bitcoin payments. And then social media stuff as well accept Bitcoin payments. Yeah, I use it very regularly.
Cool. Well, since this is a podcast about stories, would either of you have a story, a little Bitcoin story to share with us?
Yeah, I guess I did meet a guy who sold me some gold and silver for Bitcoin. He was a former CBC broadcaster as well.
Okay.
And I think he was kind of a well-off gentleman in Vancouver. He had a penthouse downtown, and he called me up. He found me on the internet somehow and said, hey, I'd like to get into this Bitcoin thing. He was in his 70s, and he paid for a taxi to bring me to his penthouse, and then I got up there, and it was this awesome, you know, bachelor pad, and he pulled out a box of silver and some gold coins and asked if he could pay, instead of paying me cash, which I'd normally take when I'm selling Bitcoin, he paid me in precious metals, so I still have some of those. Remember that.
Yeah, so there's a number of different kinds of currencies going on. It's very interesting.
Yeah, I used to, before I believed in Bitcoin as much as I do, I was buying gold and silver. I had a stack of, like, big stack of silver coins. I had some gold coins as well that I was buying at some exchanges. And it's easy to buy precious metals these days, which is kind of cool about our economy. Price performance of gold is very poor, and most people don't understand that gold's all-time high is not nowadays in the 2000s. It was in 1980 with inflation adjusted. Gold still hasn't beat its previous all-time high in 43 years. That's why I look at gold as a very poorly performing asset. And I always like bringing that up when we're on the topic of Bitcoin, because a lot of people like value gold more than Bitcoin, and they don't understand inflation-adjusted numbers. And if they did understand that, gold is not a very good-looking chart. And that's why we invest money, is to make money, right?
True. And although they look at it as something solid and tangible.
Right.
And Bitcoin is this, mm-hmm. quite literally... It's in the ether there somewhere. Well, not Ethereum, but it is.
I know what you mean, in the ether.
You know, they're numbers. Which,
yeah, it's, and that's a good point you brought up, because a lot of people who are skeptics, they'll not trust Bitcoin for that exact reason you mentioned. It's good you brought that up. Now, since Bitcoin's digital money, also banks are digital money as well.
They are.
So all our money in the bank, you got all these multi-billionaires, their money is digital.
Yeah.
Right? So
wherever I go, I pay by with my debit card. It's just digital.
There you go.
Which was ironic, when we were in Mexico, everything is cash. I go to my bank machine, take out my money, but everything after that is cash. You cannot use a card, except in the very big resort areas. But in these smaller towns, nope, it's all cash. Whereas now I can go to the farmer's market, for heaven's sakes, and buy a potato by tapping my card.
Yeah.
So that it's a big change, and it depends on the country you're in. I find it fascinating that a country like El Salvador would accept Bitcoin as their currency.
Yeah, I guess there's like certain properties of the medium of exchange that is money, and there's all these trade-offs. Like, cash is good because it's anonymous and you can hold it yourself. You're not trusting someone to hold the cash for you. It can be counterfeit. It can degrade. Bills can get ripped or lost pretty easily. And it's also something that people can steal from you. So that's why if you have a large amount of cash, you wouldn't have your life savings like in a duffel bag or somewhere, because if your house got broken into. So there's aspects of Bitcoin that, you know, are better than that on the cash front, where it's digital, it can't be counterfeit, and you can store it with a password that no one's going to know that you have Bitcoin if you don't tell them. So you don't have to physically hide it anywhere. You can just have a password, and then wherever you go in the world, it's there. You don't have to transport it in your pocket or your backpack through the airport. And with gold, it's got certain properties like being scarce, which cash doesn't have, right? Cash, they can print as much as they want. Gold, you know, there's only so much gold in the world, so it is a sound money that can't be debased. But practically, it's like if you're trying to use it to pay for things, you know, you're going to shave off a little bit of gold to pay for a coffee. Or it also has the counterfeiting problem, where people can fill gold bars with tungsten. And so to prove that it's gold, you have to actually do like a chemical test on it and stuff. And that's, you're not going to do that every time you're paying for things. So Bitcoin has all these properties that just make it a better form of money, where it has all the advantages of some of the previous forms of money and doesn't have the disadvantages that they have. If I was going to put my money somewhere, I'd put it there, not in dollars anymore.
That's really interesting. Thank you for that. That's a good overview. Thank you. The other advantage of Bitcoin at the moment, of course, is that it's likely to increase in value. So if you're buying Bitcoin today, with the hope is that next year it will be worth more if you just keep it there.
Well, yeah, because it has all these good properties that make it useful, and it's scarce, so there can't be more of it. Those two combined, they kind of drive the supply and demand, tends to make the number go up.
Right. Just to bring it back, is Bitcoin kind of the tulip craze of the 21st century?
Good question. Do you know about the tulip craze in the 1600s, right?
Yeah.
I did study, I mean, not a lot, but I looked into bubbles a little bit. There was the tulip craze. There's a few different ones. Bitcoin has already proven it's not really like a bubble, because it does have a very consistent pattern. Every 4 years, it has that halving period where the block reward gets sliced in half. That makes it more scarce. That makes the inflation go down of Bitcoin, and it makes it more scarce. Every time that happens, Bitcoin goes to new all-time highs, and it always beats its previous all-time high.
Mm-hmm. And tulips don't have those properties of a useful medium of exchange.
No. Right. And there's a very fun film on Netflix that's all about that, if you ever want to watch it. I think it's Tulip Fever or something like that. I can't remember the exact name of it, but it was quite amusing, and it's all done as it's a drama. So thank you very much for telling us about Bitcoin. Where can they go to find out more about what you have to offer?
coinos.io. That's the website.
Okay.
And we have links to our Twitter and Telegram. If you're in Vancouver, we have a Telegram group where a lot of the local Bitcoiners are online chatting. Mm-hmm. And from there, you can come to our meetups as well. We mentioned meetup.com
right.
if you want to come to our events.
.com/Bitcoin Privilege.
Okay. It's helped me a lot today. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Michelle.
Thanks, Michelle.
To get another and more boomerish perspective, I reached out to someone I knew who had put his money where his mouth is. Aaron Teich currently lives on a beautiful Gulf island while his Bitcoin continues to grow in value. And as added value, all the birds heard in this interview are completely real and not digital additions.
You're listening to Boomer Bedtime Stories.
Welcome to the show, Aaron. It's wonderful to have you on the show today. I would like you, if you could just tell me a little bit about yourself. I know you're boomerish, where you grew up, your working background, and where you're living now.
Thanks very much for having me, Michelle. I'm an Ontario boy. Grew up in a little rural town, one of those little rural towns that are dotted along Lake Ontario, along the 401 highway there between Toronto and Kingston. I took off to Los Angeles to be an actor back in the mid-80s and subsequently continued my jobs in hospitality. Right, I got into wine when I was working in New York City for a celebrity chef there and had an outstanding Spanish wine list as well as a Californian one. And then I went to the WSET. I took the Wine and Spirit Education Trust course and then started traveling and managing restaurants and looking after wine. And then found my way back to look after my mom in the last legs of her life. And after she passed away, I moved out to beautiful BC. And now live on this glorious island here called Galeano.
I can hear the birds in the background. A little change from New York City. After your mother died, she left you some money. And you decided to put a fair bit of it into Bitcoin. What was the decision that made you decide to do that? Some people would call that a risky choice.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, the interesting thing was I had first learned about Bitcoin back in maybe 2017, 2016. And at the time, understood it to be a vehicle for money laundering or for the drug trade. The Silk Road was happening with Ross Ulbricht, who's now living, you know, in jail. He's been in jail for a number of years and won't, no chance of parole, blah, blah, blah. And he was using the blockchain and Bitcoin as a way of getting payment in a system that wasn't controlled by the government. Our government controls our fiat currency and they get to print money when they want to. And, you know, the Fed controls what the interest rates are going to be in terms of inflation and whatnot. And it's a completely arbitrary number. And so we are on this spiral to inflate our money away. You know, it's getting worth less and less and less. And in 2017, I saw Bitcoin as unstable for me personally. But fast forward a few years later, and I was really concerned about the banking industry. And we're seeing it come to fruition a little bit now with a number of larger banks that are defaulting and the governments are stepping in to move them into the big four. These enormously large banks. So all these little ones stand on the precipice of failing. And I just didn't want to put my money into my checking account because we don't own that money once it goes into the bank. The bank controls whether or not they're going to give us that money back. And we have a system in Canada called the bail-in, which means if the banks go bust, they will just take the money that's owned by us in the savings account and just use that money to bail themselves out so they don't have to ask the government for a bailout. And that process is looming. And so I took my money and thought, where else can I put it? I owned a little bit of silver. I didn't own any gold. And there were reasons for that, but boring reasons. But nonetheless, it was a strategy that I put in place. And I was having a conversation with a very smart individual who laid out Bitcoin for me in a much broader sense, in a much more specific sense of from people that he knew, which led me then to do another deep dive into it, or a first deep dive into it. And I found that it was being embraced by a lot of smart computer people who were able to convince me not only the importance of Bitcoin worldwide as a global reserve currency in the future, but in the first portion, this safe hedge against inflation, inflating my money away. Bitcoin, because it was completely independent of the system, seemed like it was going to do the same thing that gold was doing, meaning it's going to hedge against inflationary and deflationary movement of the fiat currency and allow a stable platform for the integrity of my money. And that's why I decided to invest in Bitcoin. And so I just put my money into that and felt much better about it. And in fact, even though through its volatility, rising up 100% to 1,000% and crashing 80% of that 1,000% and being volatile, you can't believe it's hard to get your head around. It's not really a particularly wildly good investment if you're trying to invest in something and get your money back 3 months later and make a profit. But from the long-term gain, as we watch our inflation decrease the value of fiat currency across the world, thanks to the Federal Reserves all over, I still am very, very bullish on the idea that Bitcoin is a stable enough platform to feel safe about my hard-earned money.
There are a lot of scams out there, for sure. My husband got scammed last year, $650, and they've come back with another scam to say, hey, we'll get your money back for a fee. So I'm going, oh my goodness. Where would you suggest people go to learn more about Bitcoin that's a reliable source?
Yeah, this is a really good question. It's more important than just understanding Bitcoin. The reason that Bitcoin exists through Satoshi Nakamoto was the 2008 financial crisis, when this group of people, or a computer person, MIT grad, some people think he was, decided that the people needed a money that was untouched by government hands. And so that was launched in 2008. He wrote this fabulous white paper, which if you're at all computer science inclined, you can read and you can probably garner a lot of information out of it. It's beyond me. But there are people who have graduated from places like MIT who understand computer technology and science and can really discuss this for the novice to understand the fundamentals of it. I would suggest learning about money first, which no one understands, and they don't teach it in school. So there is a beautiful podcast, a series called What is Money, with Robert Breedlove, who's the host, and he interviews Michael Saylor, who is a software developer, very successful, and he owns a tremendous amount of Bitcoin, 140,000 of them, I think he's at this point, like billions of dollars worth of Bitcoin. And so he's a champion. And so he gets out and he does the circuit and he talks about Bitcoin. And yes, of course, it's a vested interest. But when you listen to the way he talks about Bitcoin and when he's asked questions, he puts it in very plain terms to be able to understand that this money is outside our current system. This Bitcoin, which is nothing but a ledger put on a very stable platform called blockchain technology. Now, all of these other cryptocurrencies are also on blockchain technologies, and some are layered on the Bitcoin blockchain. But you're absolutely right. There are thousands of coins, those crypto coins that are out there. And we have to really make a distinction between cryptocurrency and Bitcoin. And Bitcoin, being the first and only as a platform, has risen head and shoulders above all the other ones. And we have to remind ourselves that all of them are unregulated by the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, under the guidance of Gary Gensler. And so it's all unregulated. And that means it's not in a very stable place. The government can come along and just say, well, we've decided to close the on-ramps and the off-ramps, which is the technique that's needed in order to take your fiat and convert it into this Bitcoin or any of the other cryptocurrency, but really be clear about what people are getting into. And I think the fundamental then is learning about what is happening to your money. Where is your money going? What happens when it goes into the bank? How is money created? How is it that you have it to hold on to? And why is it that inflation gets to just decrease the value of what that dollar is? So in terms of cryptocurrency and Bitcoin, those two things need to be separated out. And Bitcoin seems to be the fundamental. It has no CEO. It has no one controlling it as a currency. It exists in a decentralized format in the ether. And it is nothing but a ledger. But the ledger is so tight and so strong that after 14 years, no one has been able to hack into it. No one has been able to change its fundamentals. It is only going to produce 21 million coins, which are divisible up to 100 million sections per coin, which means you can invest $20 or $5. You don't have to think about buying a whole coin. You get to protect it outside of the current system that we have. And that's what makes it valuable. And the fact that there is only going to be 21 million of them, they can't make any more, they're not going to print any more. So Bitcoin becomes inherently a very sound, hard money, even harder than gold, because they keep discovering more gold every year and they keep mining more gold. So if someone finds an open pit gold mine that has the size of Brazil or 100 million tons of gold in a mine somewhere, well, that just dilutes the value of gold, which has been used as the hardest currency for the last 5,000 years. But now we have a new one. And with the technological age coming upon us, it seems like this is the forefront of the way things are moving. If you want to protect your wealth, well, that's where I would be putting my money.
It's very fascinating. I think the big point you've made is that, unfortunately, we know so little about our money. It's the one thing we use, all of us, every single day, all the time, and we get zero education in it. You have to learn yourself.
That's very true. And unfortunately, oftentimes it comes on the heels of a financial catastrophe. You know, I lost all my money in 2008 in the global financial crisis. That's what started me thinking to myself, oh, well, these big banks are much more in control of my money than I am. And they get to do whatever they want with it. They get the bailout. They get $700 billion worth of bailout. And the little guy at home ends up just having to pay that money in taxes. The taxes go up to create that. Well, no banker went to jail. No banker got charged. Nothing happened. These banks that were too big to fail, they just took the ones that were failing and they moved them to bigger banks, which became even bigger, too big to fail. And that's where we are. And so I lost a lot of faith and trust in the current system. And that's made me feel safe about putting my money into Bitcoin as an unregulated security or asset. Yet still, I feel very, very good about it. And to see now new countries like El Salvador taking it on as a currency for their country. And other countries are starting to mine Bitcoin, which creates a greater infrastructure to the whole ecosystem.
So, in fact, Bitcoin is more than money. It is about personal freedom as well.
Good point that you bring up. It's my money, and I feel the right to want to protect it and spend it and invest in it the way that I see. I'm trying to look at the future and think that, yes, there's going to be a Bitcoin standard, which is also a name of a very good book that people can race out and get, and that helps to understand the concept behind Bitcoin and what its fundamental values are.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Aaron. I really appreciate it. And have a wonderful day. The birds sound lovely on your island.
It's a glorious day here, and I will enjoy it thoroughly. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to today's show. My deep appreciation to today's guests for their thoughts and perspectives on the sometimes mysterious topic of Bitcoin. Thanks again to Adam and Cole from Coinos and to Aaron Teich. Links related to today's show can be found in the show notes on BoomerBedtimeStoryRadio.com. If you have an idea or a Boomer guest that you think would be perfect for this podcast, please reach out to us at stories@BoomerBedtimeStoryRadio.com. As always, I'm your host, producer, and editor, Michelle Hall. See you next time. And until then, please keep sharing your stories, because stories are what keep the memories alive.